Good morning, TNC family. On this fourth Sunday in January, I want to share with you from the scriptures, from a story in 1 Samuel chapter 17, but I want to set it up by sharing with you some of the work of Harvard-trained PhD Paul Rosen, who is currently professor at the University of Pennsylvania and is known as an expert on, listen to this, disgust. That's right, he's an expert on disgust. He's the one who made famous the question and answer, what's worse than biting into an apple and finding a worm? Answer, biting into an apple and finding half a worm. But at the beginning of a famous paper he wrote years ago, he notes that a single cockroach will completely wreck the appeal of a bowl of cherries, but a single cherry will do nothing at all for a bowl of cockroaches. Because one yucky cockroach outweighs all the wonderful cherries, which she goes on to say is a perfect picture of a life principle true for all human beings, which is some things matter more than others. Not everything in your life should be given the same attention and focus and weight, and one cockroach will ruin an entire bowl of cherries. This is a point that Benjamin Franklin made in a very different way in a famous 1772 letter to Joseph Priestley, who later would be the one to discover oxygen, was considering a career change that would bring him more income and a new intellectual opportunity and a much higher overall standard of living, but it would involve being immersed in the unfamiliar and sometimes uncomfortable world of a wealthy employer whose friendship circle and lifestyle choices were very different from his and his family's. And so there was great upside to this new opportunity, but also great downside. And so he wrote a letter and asked his friend Benjamin Franklin for advice. And Franklin wrote back and said this, I cannot tell you the right choice, but I can give you a method for making the decision, a way to make this decision a little bit easier. Franklin went on, take out a piece of paper and draw a line down the middle, creating two columns, one of pros and one of cons. Now, as you're listening, you're like, okay, I get that. It's a familiar idea to me. Just a typical pros and cons lists. But then Franklin took it a step further, and he encouraged Priestley to examine the pros and cons and, quote, endeavor to estimate their respective weights. In other words, it's not simple math. How many pros are there on one side and how many cons on the other? Rather, it's there may be one thing or two things on the list that outweigh everything else. If there's a cockroach on one side, it doesn't matter how many cherries are on the other. Now, I've seen this principle in my role as a pastor over the years. People will come to me when making a big decision. It can be a job, relationship, travel, money, education, kids, health, relocation. And they'll come to me and either literally or sort of in their head, they will have made a list like this. And sometimes I can see what they're most focused on, which is all the positives, all the pros and possibilities of the new opportunity. But I always try to tell them that I've come to see that that is not what the wisest people look at. The smartest people I know, the wisest people I know, they look at what might derail them. They look at the greatest enemy on the list. They look for the cockroach in the bowl of cherries. And I bring all of this up, TNC, because we are 22 days into 2023, and I've heard over and over and over again about New Year's resolutions and forming better habits. And this is the time of year we go online and look for self-help books. And you read things like The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People and The 12 Qualities of a Leader and The 7 Habits of Successful People. This is the time of year we start going to the gym and start eating better and start sleeping better and start saving money. Notice in all these situations, the focus is on the pros, on adding good things. And of course, there are patterns and formulas for success. Forming the right new habits and so on is for sure important, but if you don't first deal with what can derail you, your greatest enemy, I just think you'll never find the life you've always wanted, or as Jesus would phrase it in John 10:10, the abundant life that he came to offer, or as he'd put it in Matthew 11, the easy yoke in which you find rest for your souls. I'm saying it doesn't matter how much good you add in your life if you don't first deal with the biggest enemy on the other side of the list. The giant must fall. Because in 1 Samuel chapter 17, we learn about the battle that took place in the Elah Valley, the valley located 59 miles south-southwest of Jerusalem in the West Bank of Israel. The valley where Saladin faced off against the Knights of the Crusades in the 12th century. The valley that played a central role in the Maccabean Wars with Syria in the 2nd century AD. But most famously, in the 11th century BC, the Elah Valley was where the young nation of Israel came face to face against the armies of the Philistines. The Philistines had set up camp along the southern ridge of the Elah Valley, and the Israelites pitched their tents on the northern ridge, which left the two armies looking across the valley at each other, but neither dared to move because to attack meant descending down the hill and then making a suicidal climb up the enemy's hill on the other side. And so they're in this stalemate. You can read about it for months, made worse by the fact that day after day, the Philistines send their greatest warrior down into the valley to resolve the deadlock mano a mano, which was a common practice in the ancient world, something known as single combat, where two sides in a conflict would try to avoid the heavy bloodshed of open battle by choosing one warrior to represent each side in a duel. But Israel doesn't really want to face this giant. I mean, the giant seems pretty unbeatable. And verse 11 actually indicates that they sort of just accept living in this state of worry and confusion and fear. Or at least they probably try not to think about it, distract themselves a little. Don't focus on the giant. Hey, focus on the politician or the politics or that news story or that sporting event or that streaming series or that food or that vacation. The problem is, of course, the giant won't go away on its own. And so they're sort of stuck. And now I hope you're beginning to put all these puzzle pieces together. Paul Rosen and Benjamin Franklin and the story of 1 Samuel, David and Goliath. And see a picture, which is this picture. No matter how many awesome things you add to your life in 2023, you won't find peace and joy and victory if you don't deal with the giant. The giant must fall. The cockroach must go. Because until you deal with the greatest enemy in your life, nothing else will matter. Now, you may have lots of things that you deem as enemies in your life. But I want to suggest to you three right now that you cannot live with and still experience the good life. Three enemies that the only solution is you'll need to defeat them, slay them, kill the giant. Three enemies. And then I will end today with what I believe is your best strategy, your best weapon for defeating those enemies. But first, the three enemies, and here's number one. Number one, negativity. Negativity. Negativity is like a cockroach in your bowl of cherries. Rosen describes it this way, quote, "The hardwired predisposition of animals and humans is we give greater weight to negative entities than to positive ones. Now, this is actually a concept called the negativity bias, or in the words of Trevor Moad, who is described by Sports Illustrated as the world's best brain trainer. He's worked with 12 first-round draft picks in the NFL and 8 national championship teams in college football. He's worked with Nick Saban at Alabama and Kirby Smart at UGA. He's worked with the rapper Drake and the Olympian Usain Bolt and Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg. And Moad says, quote, negativity affects you negatively 100% of the time. It's 4 to 7 times more powerful than its equivalent positivity. If you surround yourself with negativity, you will increase your errors by over 30% in your life. If you consume just 3 minutes of negative news in a day, there will be a 27% increase in the likelihood that you'll say you had a bad day. He goes on, negative news will bring you down. Negative people will bring you down. Negative attitudes and words will bring you down. Negativity will make it impossible to overcome a bad habit or start a new one. Now, he's not saying to go around living in utopian sugar either. He's not talking about what Brené Brown calls toxic positivity, forced positivity, false positivity. He's talking about a kind of attitude that causes someone like Maya Angelou to say famously, quote, if you don't like something, change it. And if you can't change it, change your attitude. Don't complain. He's talking about the counsel of like Nelson Mandela, who famously said, let your choices come from your hopes, not your fears. And so TNC, no matter what else you do this year, no matter how many new habits you add to the pro column, you'll never be able to overcome negativity. You'll have to get rid of it, kill it. The giant must fall. Now, here's the second enemy that it will be almost impossible to live with and to experience the good life alongside. Number 2, drama. I don't care how many awesome habits you develop, if you surround yourself with drama, you will find trouble. Oh, hey, come to work where I work. The drama is through the roof. We catch people doing suboptimal things all the time, and then we talk about it or hold on to it for later use or feel slighted by it. Hey, how are things going at your home? Oh, well, I'll tell you, it's drama, drama, drama. Every day there's a disagreement or a problem or an obstacle to worry about. And you know, by the way, what the synonym for drama is, or at least what a synonym for drama is? Gossip. A lot of times, folks who bring drama with them, they will share things just as a way to get attention or to feel something themselves when they share it, or to pretend like they want to be close with you. Hey, I just want to share this with you. Like if a friend comes up to me and says, oh my, hey David, did you hear about Julia? I don't think it's public knowledge, but let me share this so we can, you know, pray together for her, or so we can be aware of the situation. And what I often want to say in that moment is, be careful that you're not about to share something with me that is not yours to share. Because if you move forward and share it with me, just know that now my trust for you, even though you are the one sharing with me, now my trust for you is diminished, because now I see that in your relationships, you don't honor things that should remain confidential. And that kind of sharing, by the way, if someone shares with you like that, that's very much fake intimacy. It's closeness with you, but it's really built on judging or disliking or hating somebody else. And so, TNC, no matter what else you do this year, no matter how many new habits you add to the pro column of your life, you will never be able to overcome constant drama. You'll have to get rid of it, kill it. The giant must fall. Okay, here's the third enemy it'll be almost impossible to live with to experience the good life alongside. Number three, unpredictability. Unpredictability. And I'm not going to spend too much time on this because, first, it's a close cousin of drama. But second, because I feel like I talk about this a fair bit. So let me just quote Jim Collins, quote, "The signature of mediocrity is chronic inconsistency." I love that because it's so true. Said another way, if you want a mediocre physical life, just be super inconsistent with your diet, exercise, and sleep. If you want a mediocre financial life, be inconsistent with your giving, saving, and spending. If you want a mediocre relationship, hang out with folks who you just never know how they're going to respond. I know in the world of sports, for example, the worst kind of teammate is the one who you never know if they're going to put forth a consistent effort accompanied by a consistent attitude. Some days they're optimistic, some days pessimistic. Some days they complain, some days they encourage. Some days they're patient, some days they're angry. Some days they'll work hard, some days they're lazy. It's a roller coaster and it's exhausting. And many people think that when you get out a piece of paper and draw a line down the middle and put pros on one side and cons on the other, that you should only look at the pros. But that's not true, because you have to look at what will derail you. What will derail you? This is what wise people look at. Now, I'm not trying to give you a formula for success today, but I am trying to say that if you don't deal with what can derail you, you will be in trouble. Now, dealing with what can derail you is easier said than done. And so you'll have to do some work to figure out the best way to get the cockroach out of your cherries. But for most people, and I want to end with this, here's the secret. I said I get to the solution side at the end today, so here's the best weapon for defeating these enemies, these giants in your life. Increase the amount of time you spend with people who are positive, people who are not dramatic, and people who are steady. And decrease the amount of time you spend with people who are negative and people who are dramatic and unpredictable. There's a social psychologist, a man named David McClelland, who is a professor at Harvard, and he studied the effect of community on individuals. If you've ever heard the phrase, your reference group, he was one of the guys who put that phrase on the map. And he said that the people with whom you habitually associate are called your reference group. And he writes that your reference group will determine as much as 95% of your success or failure in life. He goes on to say that basically you will become the average of the five people you hang around the most. Because the people you surround yourself with, they'll either raise or lower your standards. They'll either help you become the best version of yourself or encourage you to become a lesser version of yourself. Nobody becomes great on her or his own. No woman becomes great on her own. No man becomes great on his own. We become like our friends. Or as Solomon puts it in the book of Proverbs chapter 13 and verse 20, if you walk with the wise, you'll become wise. But the companion of fools suffers harm. Or, to quote the work of Chip Heath, a professor at Stanford, or Dan Heath, a senior fellow at Duke's University Center of Social Entrepreneurship, they said, humans look for cues from others about how to behave. This is why baristas and bartenders seed their tip jars. They're trying to send signals about the norm for behavior. This is why hotels sometimes will put little cards in the hotel bathroom saying something like, the majority of guests at our hotel reuse their towels at least once during the day. This is why obesity is contagious, and generosity is contagious, and kindness is contagious, and gossip is contagious. And this is why if you surround yourself with people who pray, you're more likely to pray Surround yourself with people who read and you're more likely to read. Surround yourself with people who are optimistic and you're more likely to be optimistic. Surround yourself with people who have dealt well with grief and you're more likely to deal well with grief. And this is why if you make sure you surround yourself with folks who are positive and drama-free and predictably steady, you will begin to crowd out the greatest giant enemies of your life, negativity and drama and unpredictability. And one day, this shepherd boy David shows up in the Valley of Elah. And David has a history of being positive and steady in crisis. You can read about it. Of living from a secured confidence in a God he loves and serves. And Goliath, the giant swordsman, ends up going mano a mano against David, who's a marksman slinger. Verse 40, David chose 5 smooth stones from the stream, put them in the pouch of his shepherd's bag, and with his sling in his hand, approached the Philistine, and David slays the giant. Verse 51, David runs over to Goliath. He took hold of the Philistine's sword, drew it from its sheath, and after he had killed him, he cut off his head with the sword. When the Philistines saw that their hero was dead, they turned and ran. Verse 52, then the men of Israel and Judah surged forward with a shout and pursued the Philistines to the entrance of Gath and to the gates of Ekron. And when the Israelites returned from chasing the Philistines, they plundered their camp. Goliath goes down, and the rest is history. Once Goliath is defeated, read ahead, you'll see that a whole bunch of successes and victories and peace follows. Defeat the giant, and everything else follows. Push the first domino, and the rest come tumbling down. So, TNC, don't add a bunch of cherries to your cockroach. Get rid of the cockroach. The giant must fall. And that is part of the value and the strength of our church family. It's to be people of faith and joy and positivity and steadiness. People who gather together regularly and pray and learn and trust the God for whom no enemy is too big and no giant is too tall and no cross is too rough and not even death has power over. Because your giant will come down into the Valley of Elah and he will call up to you in 2023 and he'll try to defeat you. But the giant must fall. Let's pray. God, I pray now for every person listening. I pray that they would know that there is no giant that they have to face, that they have to face alone. That no matter how big their enemy seems, that this church community is a network of faith and joy and positivity and steadiness, fueled by a great love and trust for you, God. A God who's really big and really good and unconditionally loving and really able to do more than we could ever ask or imagine. And so now, TNC, may the Lord bless you and keep you and make his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you. Turn his face toward you and give you peace. Amen.